Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Twitter grappled with nuisance spam from the Chinese state intended to obscure news of COVID restriction protests happening in cities across the country. Even though Amazon Alexa devices are pretty popular, the digital assistants are on pace to lose $10 billion this year because users just don't buy products with them. The Department of Justice opens an investigation into a real estate tech company accused of collusion with landlords over rent prices. And the UK launches a market probe into Apple and Google's mobile dominance with their respective browsers, but this seems different than the old Internet Explorer saga. We've got all this and more for you in episode 62 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly is your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. Can I Lose 20 Pounds by New Year's?
That's aggressive.
That's aggressive. Yeah. Have you looked at the 2 pounds a week guideline?
No, I'm looking to do some, not intermittent fasting, what do they call it? Don't eat. No, I'm just joking. Cause my birthday is New Year's and I had all these plans and then Thanksgiving came and I was just like, you know what? Not even Thanksgiving. Yeah, off the rails. Not even that. Like the month of November. I really didn't.
I mean, I don't know. Seemed like you kind of went ham on that Halloween candy too, though.
Oh, yeah. Dad so, text. Well, yeah, I did that.
Well, that's a responsibility though. You know, you got to take the kids candy. You know, you got to learn what taxes is like.
Well, so my thing is I've never really been the type of person to, starve myself when it comes to diet. Now I will eat better, you know, I will cut down on things, but I'm not one of those people, oh, cut out sugar, cut out carbs, cut out meat, cut out whatever. I'll cut
everything
down
in moderation,
right? I cut down, I'll cut back, and then my thing is on holidays I don't diet, on vacations I don't diet, and definitely
that's
on
great
birthdays. Definitely.
Listen,
on birthdays.
Life is short.
Right. Cause I love cake. So, you know, any birthday, I'm going to eat some cake. Right. But for the past year, I've been exercising like heavy regular, like on the regular, even when I was on vacation, even when it was somebody's birthday or it was a holiday. When November hit, I just didn't do nothing. So on top of eating heavy, for Thanksgiving and then the week leading up, cause my wife didn't cook. So we kind of just ate out and ate junk food or whatever. You know, yeah. I didn't exercise at all. So now it's like, all right, I got to get extra back into it because like I said, my birthday is on New Year's. So me and my wife get dressed up, we go out and I'm going to need to work off a couple of these pounds. So I got to kick in extra gear here.
You got some good time though. 30 days is not a bad amount of time if you focus.
And a little over. I got a buffer time in there. So we got, you know, a month and a week. Looks like it.
You could pull it together. I have faith.
We shall see.
So I'm with you on the working out. Believe it or not, today, my oldest daughter and I started our old year's resolution, as I call it. Cause we don't do the New Year's resolution. We just decided we're going to start working out. And we made a plan about a month ago and we said that Monday after, Thanksgiving, we was going to hit it. So, today's the first day. Tomorrow will be the first day that we're together. I'm going to pick her up. We're going to both go to the gym workout. So I'll be with you, man. I ain't doing that diet thing. It's my diet is just eat better, as compared to cutting it. But, I'm with you, man. It's like, you know, got to get that sexy back. But, before we get to, our first tech story, just want to, shout out all of our patrons who are hanging out with us here in the live stream, and let everybody listening know that you can also become a patron, of the Tech John. Head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That's the Tech JAWN. And we've got multiple tiers over there. Any of those tiers get you access to our live stream and after party. And, you know, anything that you do to help support the show and allow us to bring this tech to you, we really appreciate. So I just want to get that little commercial out of the way and then kind of jump into, you know, some tech. It really was, because of the holiday, you know, was a light kind of tech week. But one thing that I noticed, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to what's going on over in China. Where they're basically, they are under like early 2020 COVID like restrictions again. I mean, they're shutting down cities and there's just a ton of unrest, a ton of protest. So what it looks like is happening is that the government is actually spamming Twitter with, you know, they're basically sending out, a bunch of like porn sites and adult sites and this and that and the other. Obscuring the news of the protest. And the reason they're doing that is because so many of the human moderators have either been let go or have left Twitter. They just got a humongous queue. So you've actually, and this is not the first time that the government has done this. They've done this on numerous occasions to try to, you know, trample down speech. They're trying to make sure that, you know, folks aren't able to get their message out. But I just thought that this was, you know, an interesting story. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to figure out why not puppies? Why not flowers? Why not waterfalls? Why not?
Because I think what they're trying to do to get, they're trying to get, content with specific, from specific regions and specific, cities downgraded. So, you know, you can spam with puppies, but somebody out there may still be searching for puppies. But if you're spamming with porn, that's going to get that content. All coming from Shenzhen or Shanghai or something like that, that's gonna downgrade all of that type of content and suppress it, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And people are less likely to see any content from that region if it's a lot of that objectionable content.
I think that because
they're definitely tying location to the tweets that they're putting out there. And again, it, you know, you get 50,000 tweets, 50,000 porn tweets from Shanghai. The rest of the content from Shanghai is going to get, you know, suppressed to a certain degree. Gotcha. And I think that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. And another thing is that, you know, just when it comes to content moderation, there's definitely AI and bots to do quite a bit of it. But there's generally humans on the backside of it to go and check to make sure that they are suppressing the right thing. Oh no, it was not what we thought it was. It was something else. Let's go ahead and let that come out. And I think, you know, it's just kind of an avalanche. There are way, less people who do that kind of thing at Twitter. Right now than there were before.
Not that
so
there
this
were
is
enough before.
Exactly. Right? That's the thing. It's like, you know, this story isn't so much about necessarily what Elon is doing. It's about just issues that Twitter has had, you know, historically and systematically. But it seems like, especially right now, China has said, oh, this is the attack that we're going to use, or this is the exploit that we're going to use, because we know that it works, and it's going to probably especially work if there are fewer people to actually go and say, oh no, this is the right thing to let through. Oh no, this is the right thing to let through. So, just another way that
it's interesting. I'm trying to understand, specifically because I think one of the main issues that sort of sparked the protest was that there was a fire in an apartment building and 10 people got killed. And they're blaming that on the fact that the emergency responders couldn't get to them quickly enough because of the COVID lockdown. And I'm trying to understand, like, were they locked inside the building? Is that what their lockdown looks like? Or is it such that responders can't get through certain streets that get locked down. Like it's very, very draconian. But I've been hearing some reports about the fact that, you know, they got to get tested regularly. If one person in an apartment building tests positive, but doesn't have symptoms, even the whole building has to get locked down. Like really, really hardcore things. But with respect to that particular fire, I'm like, was the building, like the outside door, was that locked and they had locked the people in? Like, are they imprisoned in China right now because of that? And it just seems really, really like wild over there.
Well, you know, I guess enough for them to protest, enough for China as a government to suppress all of the protests, because we, United States, we protested COVID, but we really wasn't about it. Like China, they are right now. So it must be something serious to where they're like, you know what?
Oh, absolutely.
Enough of this.
It's been the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think they're just kind of over it at this point, but it's just like, what are y'all doing? They haven't been able to, I'm just on this because I literally was listening to this on NPR today. And, you know, the minister of education or communication or whatever over there basically was saying China's not doing enough good PR because they're not even really pointing to how well this policy is working. Like how many lives have been saved because you won't let people leave their homes? You know, how many potential deaths have been avoided? They're not doing a good job of saying whether or not this policy even works. And now people are speaking and they don't want it. So something gonna have to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a mess over there. And Twitter is one of the ways that we hear about the stuff. It's like, you know, we, you know, how do we know that maybe they had the doors locked, you know, or building not letting people out? That's how, you know, we don't know that that's the case. We don't know it's not the case, but generally Twitter would be the thing that would let us know that. And the government is taking a stance that, nah, we don't want nobody knowing anything that we don't want them to know. So, you know, that is a thing, you know, with China. Like, this is not a new thing for them. This is not something that has never happened before. It's probably something that's going to happen again, but it's just interesting that, you know, governments that do this kind of stuff, they're up on what's happening within companies. It's like, they're going to figure out where they can exploit and they're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I mean, literally, it's probably someone's job. How can we suppress this information that people are trying to put on Twitter? Let's make all the stuff look bad. If everything that's coming out of here looks like it needs to be moderated, then nothing that's coming out of here is not going to be moderated. And maybe because there's fewer moderators, the news that we don't want getting out is not going to get out.
It's almost like a DDoS like style attack.
Yeah.
Swatting themselves.
Yeah. Almost like a DDoS. And it's funny because I saw, I think in one of the other articles you posted, Rob, about the idea, and I heard this on NPR too, that they were using a piece of white paper as a symbol of their voices being suppressed because, you know, other imagery and captions, you know, the government's looking for specific captions that they can, you know, censor and stuff like that. So people have been just taking pictures, holding up a blank sheet of white paper to show that they're being silenced. And now the government has started looking for sheets of white paper. So it's like, you know, every time they figure out what people are going to try to get around the censorship, they come up with a new different type of censor, type of thing to get around it. So it is pretty bad over there. And I'm not, you know, you probably won't find me wrapping myself in an American flag like that anytime soon. But I really did think to myself, like, wow, you know, this is one of those times when you're like, I'm glad I live in the U.S.
You know,
because at least we have the illusion of, you know, free speech and it's written down somewhere and the government is not supposed to be able to do this type of thing here. So it did make me, you know, a little bit grateful today.
I was just going to say this is that, you know, we complain a lot about what goes on in America because there's a lot to complain about the stuff that goes on here in America. That being said, our sign game is strong. Signage is strong over here. You could pretty much make signs to say and, you know, depict pretty much whatever you want without fear of going to prison, because of what you wrote on a piece of cardboard. Usually, I'm not saying that that's not always the case. You know, I know that there are probably some protesters out there like, Rob, you don't know what's going on out here in these streets. I'm just saying generally, we don't have to worry about having blank poster boards because we're worried about it either being censored, from people with cell phones that are taking pictures of it, or the police arresting us because of what our sign said. That is usually something that's not going on here. So I'm right with you on that. But yeah, I just thought, like I said, this is a Twitter story that's not so much about the recent acquisition of Twitter. This is just about, this is the kind of stuff that gets Twitter regularly. And it just seems like, especially right now, this is the type of thing that a government like China could exploit.
Well, when you lay off half your workforce, this is kind of what you get.
Yeah, it's over. We might get to that in some after party, some discussions of just what that workforce looks like. But, this next story, y'all, did you know that, Alexa and basically Amazon's, voice devices are doing as poorly as they were? I read through this long ARS Technica article and it's a second to read it. But they're on pace, Amazon, to lose $10 billion on Amazon Alexa this year. And I thought the Alexa was like super popular. And what it turns out, it is. It is super popular. People love the device. What they don't do is spend money beyond buying the device. So the problem that Amazon is having is that they sell all of these Alexa devices at darn near next to cost. And their expectation was, well, people are going to use these devices to buy more things from Amazon. And that's absolutely not what's happening. People buy these devices because they want to say, you know, and I'm not going to do it because I don't want to throw people's, devices into doing stuff, but they say, hey, keyword, who won the Laker game last night? Hey, keyword, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? Hey, keyword, when is my next appointment? Those things are not money generating activities for Amazon. What Amazon was hoping was that people were going to actually go and say, hey, keyword, buy me some dirt, some soap detergent, hey, keyword, order me a new toothbrush heads. And that's absolutely not happening. And because of that, they're taking this big L on all this hardware. And this is one of the reasons why they've done the biggest layoff in Amazon's history.
Could it also be that the, go ahead, Stephanie.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Terrence.
I was going to say, could it be also that since the first iteration of the Echo devices, these new joints have been crap to where they really haven't sold hardly any of them? If you look at the new Alexa devices, the Echo devices, they don't look attractive at all, even compared to the ones that just the initial, run of the little tall cylindrical Echo devices than in the small hockey pucks. They didn't change them. They kind of look like home pods, and they were just throwing stuff at the wall. And now they got some unattractive devices that also, like Rob said, nobody buys things on. Like the ones in my house, we use them to set alarms and we use them to check the weather, and that's it.
Well, the way my paranoia is set up, I don't have any of those things. I don't have my house is very dumb. There is no smart anything connected, in my home currently. I do own a Google, assistant, like a home, Google Home, but it's in a box where, and I probably have an Echo around here somewhere in a box that somebody gave me, but, I just ain't about that life. The thing that surprised me the most about the, article though, besides the fact that they're on track to lose $10 billion, was the fact that they don't play any ads on Alexa. So I don't use it enough to know that you don't hear ads, because I just always assume because you're giving so much information, even if you are just asking for weather or sports scores or turn on my lights or play this song, that's a lot of data. And I just assume they were collecting that data and selling it like everybody else does, who has any sense in their head to, around how to make revenue, at a tech company. So I was very, very surprised that the, and it actually says, The plan never materialized, though. It's not like Alexa plays ad breaks after you use it. So the hope was that people would buy things on Amazon via their voice. And so I'm just like, why wouldn't you play ad breaks? Like that just makes sense with a device like this. It just makes sense. And like I said, you can glean enough information, you know, from the stuff people do say to Alexa to do targeted advertising. So like Amazon just really, I don't know, just dropped the ball on that one. They was lunching on that one.
So my question, you know, to your point, Stephanie, is the, you know, as big as a website that Amazon is, do they have enough web properties out there to where they can actually take what they learn from you via your Echo or, you know, or your Alexa device and present actual display ads in front of you exactly like Google does? I'm thinking about, I have the Google Home. I have like three or four Google Home minis. So I have like, you know, one on each floor, and then I have one, you know, and my wife has one in her office. It is uncanny how quickly you can ask one of those devices something, and then within moments, that thing you asked for is an ad on YouTube. Nice. It's uncanny. It's like, wow, this, you know, I think to myself regularly, man, Google is on it. They are scrubbing all the data that I'm giving them and using it to make money off of me, you know, like a madman. I mean, they are doing their thing. And although I'm not really into the Alexa game, you know, my mother, those are the devices that my mother has. And she uses them like I do, ask for the weather, you know, ask for games, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I, you know, but there's nothing that comes after it. So as you were saying, there's no added plays. And then also there's no website that I'm going to that's going to actually put that stuff in front
crazy.
Of me.
Cause that's like the low hanging fruit that would get them paid. Like, I don't know how you, even if you thought that people were going to use this to buy stuff, which is a valid, assumption. Like, you got this thing on your kitchen counter and you need more toilet paper. Alexa, order me more toilet paper. If you order toilet paper from Amazon anyway, you could say, Alexa, order me more toilet paper. I get that. But this also is just that kind of no brainer. Since we getting information anyway, let's get multiple streams of income. Let's get our bag a couple different ways with orders and with selling the data. Like that it just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to me that they don't serve you ads, but
maybe people aren't just at the level to where they will use their voice to buy stuff. You know, people really like going shopping and touching items. I've heard people say, I still like to go touch it. I still like to go try it on. Whatever the case may be. Secondly, people will use an app. They'll use an app and they'll see it. They can read through the reviews. They can see what other people said. They can see what other things that are popular in this segment, in this category. They're okay with buying that way. Maybe people still ain't hip to order me some more toilet paper sight unseen, because maybe they're scared that, I don't know, Amazon's going to back up a truckload of one-ply scratchy toilet paper. I don't know. You know, go through that whole process, you know, maybe people ain't ready yet.
That's actually one of the things that the article...
That definitely could be, yeah.
That's one of the things that this article alludes to, that people just aren't ready to make purchases sight unseen. When it's so easy to pick your phone up, see the thing that you want to purchase on Amazon and then buy it there. So I was reading.
I thought by now, though, you know, you could have a list of preferences.
Yeah, and, you gotta go set all that
and
up.
It's like, so if I say Amazon ordered more rolls of toilet paper, you know, I want the Charmin extra soft and not, you know, the generic John. So like, I get that. And I understand why people may not just want to arbitrarily have that sort of direct link to spending money. I think you want to put putting a little friction in between them and their purchasing decisions, just to make sure they actually want it, just to make sure, you know, whatever. But still, I just think Amazon really, they didn't engineer this well, like the strategy behind how this was going to work and generate revenue for them. It doesn't seem like they really thought it out all the way through.
That's absolutely fair. But then I always try to think, it was like, okay, me and Terrence use these devices. They probably made their money off of selling them at cost for us. But, you know, when I just say regular people who just, they got the only reason they have the Echo is because it was on sale for $19 or $29 or whatever it was. And, oh, that's kind of cool. And they have it and they plug it in and they don't even really think about it any more than they've done that to where they have, I've got to go on Amazon and I've got to set up my preferences for the things that I like so I can easily tell, you know, I haven't done that. And that's absolutely, I buy stuff off of Amazon all the time. I would say that between Halloween and probably to a week after Christmas, there will be someone dropping off something from Amazon darn near every day here at my house. So I am actually the target and I've never gone in and set up preferences and done this and done that. So when I'm thinking of my brother, he's very technically, technologically savvy, but he ain't into it like we into it. If I'm not doing it, I know he's not going to do it. I know if my brother's not doing it, then like my mother is, that's never going to happen for her. Not because she couldn't, just because she's not. For her, it's how much easier does it make it for me to do it that way as compared to pull my phone out and click on buy now? So, I'm just wondering if Amazon is now figuring it out, even though they have all this data on folks, even though they, are the biggest marketplace on the planet at this point, or at least, the biggest one, in the Western world at this point, they have all this data. They have all these people who are buying things, but they're not Google in the sense that the product is the person. Their products are still products. Even though they're collecting a ton of data on us, their products are still products. Google's product is us.
They better get hip to the game then and start changing that mindset. Because that, like I said, it just doesn't make any sense for them not to be doing that.
Right.
And then not to be, I don't even know that they have used that as a selling feature, because if you're deliberately not serving ads, I would think that, you would gain some level of market share with your hardware by promoting that. And they're not even using it to their advantage to say, hey, we're not selling your data,
they're not using it to the fullest extent of, of their ability. I also wonder, would people just, you're giving me ads. I don't want that, because I'll be honest, it takes you a minute to get blind to them. But when they first start, it's so easy to just not go back to using it. I think about, and I'm changing gears here. I'm thinking about like a YouTube might be about to get some money out of me for ads, because it's like every single, I watch a lot of YouTube videos. And I just like, man, every time, every 6 or 7 minutes, an ad comes up. And it's like, am I consuming enough content here that it makes sense for me to give them money every month to not have those ads come up? I'm thinking about that. But in the case of Amazon, I'm already giving Amazon money every month to actually have them deliver stuff to me. If now on top of that, you can start sending me ads, and like, it's just easier to just not use that device. So I don't know. It's like, I was shocked by this, because it's hard to go into somebody's home and not see a Google or an Echo device or something like that. And I do believe that there's more Echoes and Alexa devices, because Alexa's built into half of everything now. I think there's, just so much of that out there. I would have thought that, they're actually doing quite well. But the problem, as we said, is that it's not about selling the Alexa at cost. It's about not selling any other services on top of it. So Amazon's got to get that figured out.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And I want to make a little bit of a program change here. I didn't pull this one story down about what the Department of Justice is doing as far as real estate. It looks like they are opening an investigation into a real estate tech company because the tech companies or this tech company is being accused of colluding with landlords. So basically, there's this service that you know that landlords can use to do a lot of things. But one of the things that this service can do is actually tell you what rents are in similar properties that you don't own, in different locations that may be close to yours. And what it looks like landlords are doing now is they're getting together on this app and it's like, okay, we're going to raise our rent here. You could also raise your rent there. That way you won't have people who are looking at, these like apartments in a particular area. $100 a month can really make a difference. But if all the, if all the landlords know that they need to be within $30-$40 of each other, they're using these apps to actually, illegally set their prices. Which is a big problem because that basically allows them to over time infinitely raise their rates without really having, a market driver push them down. So that's a problem for me. It should be a problem for a lot of folks, but that particular one is a problem for me.
Yeah. I think especially with the way rents are in major cities, especially it's almost impossible to afford to live in San Francisco or New York City or, LA. And it's just when people do things like this, it just, the level of greed that goes into making these types of decisions when you're talking about shelter and housing, it never ceases to amaze me. It never ceases to amaze or sicken me, really.
Yeah, what made me even come across this story is that I was on, I think it might have been a Facebook group, and somebody just asked a question. It's like, so when did rent start costing more than mortgages? And the general response was kind of like forever. It's like it's been that way for an awfully long time. And they were talking about, I'm trying to literally rent, an apartment, and it costs XYZ dollars a month, or I could buy the condo across the street that literally is exactly the same as the apartment that I'm trying to buy. And granted, I would have to have a down payment that would not be required for the apartment. The apartment only required like first month. I think with, to get that mortgage, you're going to have to do probably, 15%, 20%. If I do that and then just pay the mortgage, I'm actually paying 20-30% less than what the rent is. And it's like, yeah, welcome to the earth. I mean, welcome to the world. That's kind of how it is. But if landlords are now using software like this to actually, okay, how can we drive the rent up even more? Man, that's like you said, I own property. I don't have a problem with landlords charging what their property is worth and actually making a profit off of it. But when you're just gouging because you got some buddies on some software and you can figure out how, if we raise it up in this development and this development and this development and everybody kind of all, winks and nods and we're all going to go up, 10%. We're all going to go up 20% over normally, what we do. Then residents really don't have a choice. If they want to live in this area and one of these 5, 10, 12 different complexes, they're really going to have no choice because we've all raised our rates up. I'm glad that the government's looking into this.
But the question is, whose fault is it? Is it the government can look into it all they want to, but is this the people who use the software's fault or is it the software's fault? Because again, according to this story in ProPublica, what happened was some of the landlords that use, let me see if I can find it, Real Page, they had a user group, a forum that includes landlords who uses the company software. They had grown to 1,000 members who meet in private at an annual conference to take part in quarterly phone calls. And that is what is bringing about all this anti-competitive coordination, so on and so forth, right? So I guess the question is, people take software and use it and mold it to their benefit, but who's responsible, right? Should the government come down on this group who RealPage and I forget the two pieces of software, but could these pieces of software be like, hey man, we put out the software.
It sounds like they just provided the platform, right. But the people found a way to exploit the platform for their own benefit.
They can say, hey man, we do what we can, put in these, that, this, that, and the third. But I mean, y'all should be hitting these landlords directly.
And that's always the case. Like for whatever you do, somebody is going to find a way to get over. And then when you do something else, they're going to find a way to get around it. And it just sucks. Like I said, this is people's, you know, way of living, and people need shelter, and you shouldn't be out here trying to gouge people into situations that are going to put them in a precarious spot.
Yeah,
You said you wasn't wrapping an American flag around your body anytime soon. This is why.
Listen, this is why.
So
no capitalism.
This is one of the ones where I think if the DOJ is going to open up an investigation, they have to look at the software because that's what's making this possible. But they also have to look into the landlords that are colluding with each other. To me, the actual landlords colluding with each other is a bigger problem, because if you had a bunch of different companies that all decided, hey, we're all going to get together, we're going to meet up at the lodge or wherever it is they meet up, and we're going to collude with each other to artificially raise prices across everything, unless you are the NFL or Major League Baseball, the government really doesn't like those kind of things happening.
Unless the government is doing it via these global banks, Credit Suisse and IMF and the World Bank
and all that.
Now y'all want to come down on the little landlords that decided to do it?
Landlords, the ones that got to fall on their sword, basically.
Okay.
It's just like, y'all can
like I said, this one was interesting to me because as somebody who owns commercial real estate, America. It's like, you got to be careful of this. I just think, are we living in a dream world when we say that you just need to, you know, make a fair profit, treat people right, and run a good company? Yes, we're living in a dream world, because we want to make all the money that is legally possible for us to make, we want to make. And then even if it ain't legal, let's try to dance on that line. If we can just be in front of where the legislation is going to come, then we can make more money. Just make all of it. So, and I don't want people to think that I am anti-capitalist. I am not at all. This is not that. It's just that I know, I remember when my daughter was looking for an apartment, when she was going to the University of Maryland, just outside of DC. It's impossible. Unless you want 11 roommates, it's impossible to find, you know, good. It's like, wait a minute. I could literally be 15 minutes down the road and pay half for a much bigger, nicer apartment. It is like location is everything. And it's like, this one's just, it was just kind of close to my heart, because it's like, I know how difficult it is for people to go out and try to find, just places to live. So, y'all, before we, get to this last story that we're going to talk about, I did want to just mention this as a quick hit and see if either of you had any thing to say on this. So, the UK is launching a probe into Apple and Google over their mobile dominance with browsers, because I believe the number was 97% of people on phones use Safari or use Chrome. And I'm thinking, are you kind of barking up the wrong tree? Because those are the defaults that come on mobile phones. Now, granted, you can go and you can download you know, other browsers and use them. But what do you want the, you know, what is Google supposed to do? What is Apple supposed to do? Do they now have to get past these probes from the UK? Do they have to just start installing other people's stuff on their devices and hope that people use it?
I think they're probably gonna, if I was these governing bodies, and it's funny because you just put that number out there, 97%, so like all of them. But then in the next paragraph, it says, we plan to investigate whether the concerns we have heard are justified, and if so, identify steps to improve competition. I'm like, it's 97%. I think at least the probe is justified. Whether you do anything about it or not, I think it's at least justified to investigate. But if I was one of these European governing, you know, bodies, I think what I might do as a to mitigate the appearance of anti-competition is ask on setup. Like when you get a new device mm-hmm. and you turn it on and mm-hmm. you're stepping through the hello screen and, mm-hmm. and doing all that, connecting your iCloud account, like mm-hmm. ask which browser you want, you know, right. and offer them a choice of, you know, Chrome, Safari, you know, DuckDuckGo, whatever the case might be, offer them a choice of browser. I think that's probably one of the few things you can do, as default, or just keep making it so that a pop-up comes up every time you open your browser saying, do you want mm-hmm. to, like, Edge does that in Windows. Microsoft does that. Like, if for some reason I use Edge on my PC, it always asks me if I want mm-hmm. to make Edge my default browser. I'm like, no, I don't. I only opened it because that's where the link took me. And so, you know, maybe they could do something like that too.
Right. And they kind of already do that a little bit. That same scenario that you just mentioned, Stephanie, as it relates to Windows and whether you're using Edge or Chrome or whatever the case may be, it kind of does that on mobile devices a little bit. Now, it's not as prominent, but there are some times where I've opened up a Safari website, and Chrome will say, hey, you know, do you want to make this, you know, we see your Chrome's not your default browser. Do you want to use it? And you can easily on the back end, after you set everything up, you can go in and change your default mail browser, default web browser, default, bunch of other things. Right. But like you said, like I mentioned, you got to do that on the back end. Right. A quick shut up that Apple and Google could do with, like you just mentioned, on the onset, which browser you want to use, which mail app you want to use, which calendar, what's your default contacts, what's your default notes, whatever the case may be, and then let people choose. Now, most people, you know, especially like people like me who are in the ecosystem, or most people who understand the importance of, well, if I use the mail app on an iPhone, that's going to give me more of an intended user experience versus using Outlook or using whatever the case may be. Most people are going to end up clicking the things that the main company wants you to pick anyway. But, you know, a quick shut up would be like, all right, well, we'll do it on the front end. And then it may drop to 96%. So it's like, all right, we gave them the choice. It's still high. Now what you going to do?
I think what they going to do, if they did something like that, though, I think a couple of things they would do. Number one, prioritize theirs at the top choice as the top choice, and explain why you want to pick this one versus the other ones and all the rest of that. But I also think, you know, something, while that seems like a logical option, I think it would degrade your experience on the phone in general, because some people won't pick what they probably should have picked or won't even know what to pick. And they'll be picking some random stuff. And then their experience using the device is going to degrade, because they've picked these random things. And now you're going to be blaming the device maker instead of these regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't look at this as Google and Apple are doing stuff like what Microsoft did back in today, to where they made it darn near impossible to not have Internet Explorer be the default. It was like you literally had to sign away a child to not have Internet Explorer be the default and come back and set it as the default, even if you chose to do something else. This is just more or less, well, here's what comes on it. If you want, you know, and I don't know about the iPhone, but with Android, any browser you want to put on Android, you just download it and install it and set it to your default, and then you're rocking with it. You don't have to jump through a ton of hoops, you know, in order to make it work. And most people just, it's kind of like, you know, I look at it like this. When you buy a house, generally, if you're doing a new build house, the toilets that come in the house, you might upgrade, you know, some people might upgrade and they get a bidet and this and that and the other, but most folks are coming with the standard toilets that come in the house. It's just, these are the ones that came on it. And it's not until you do a reno years later that you decide, oh, I want to get the toilet that has the heated, you know, the heated seats on it, or, you know, I want a high rise or whatever the case is. You just bought the house and this happened to be what came in the house. You know, you didn't get a different sink. You know, the house came with this sink, and it's just the sink that you use. That may not be the greatest example in the world, but that's kind of what I think about when you just buy stuff and the things that you bought, it just came with, you know, something. You could absolutely go and download something else for free and install it and use it, but it requires that the user actually do that. So I wonder what the remedy would be here. Are they going to go and, like I said, you know, making an option? Here are other browsers. That's cool, but, you know, where's the cutoff? You know, I'm certain that it would be.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if it's an Android device, it comes with Chrome as the default, but you could also have Firefox. Maybe you have, let's see, another, you have Edge on there. Maybe Brave browser, but then like Opera. Is Opera the cutoff because it's less than 1% of people who use browsers use Opera? You know, where does that cut off? At some point, somebody's going to get mad. It's like, you know, are you going to be like the Smucker's aisle at the grocery store? You ever go to the Smucker's aisle to where it's just 1,912 different jellies and you stand there and you can never select one because the options are so many. So you just get grape. Yeah. You just get grape because you don't know what else you're supposed to pick.
You can't regulate technical competency.
Yeah,
you know, you're asking something of the public, and not that the public's not necessarily technically competent, but not everybody is going to do their due diligence to understand why you're making these choices. Most people won't care, number one. And then the rest aren't going to do the due diligence or aren't going to understand why you need to make these choices. And sometimes, you know, there is such a thing as too much choice. And, you know, if this is my phone, then damn it, I'm putting my browser on my phone. Like you want to put your, if Opera, Firefox, you want to put a browser on a phone, make a Firefox phone. You know what I mean? We are investing the resources and the energy and the R&D and the capital in creating this hardware. Mm-hmm. So that we can promote our software. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, now all of a sudden we got to let everybody have a seat at the table, it's not realistic. It's not sustainable. And, you know, it's not necessarily fair either. It's just when it comes to browser selection. Now app stores are different, but right. You know, when we're talking about browsers, I think this is a little bit of an overreach, on the part of the European, you know, organization.
And last thing I'll say on this, I wonder also, and this may be only in the case of Android, but isn't that kind of up to the OEMs as well? Because I'm thinking like, my mother-in-law has a Boost mobile phone. Mm-hmm. When she gets the phone and turns the phone on, there's Boost mobile apps on there. Now,
there's all kind of now, crap on.
That's my mother-in-law has the Boost mobile phone. My mother has the exact same phone, but she got hers right from Google or right from Samsung. Has none of the Boost Mobile stuff on it. So whose decision is it to actually put the stuff on the phone? Boost Mobile said, we want these apps on here. So I wonder if the UK looks at that, do they have to look at the phone manufacturers and say, hey, not the phone manufacturers, but the OEMs and say, you need to, you know, give additional option, because, you know, Google is not determining that, you know, Boost Mobile puts Boost Mobile stuff on Boost Mobile phones. Boost Mobile's determining that. And I would imagine that, you know, any other company where you're getting that branded phone from them, you know, does the same. So this will be just an interesting one to look at and see, you know, where this one goes, because it reminded me a lot of the old Internet Explorer days, but it's different because neither Apple or Google is making it so that you can't install something else. It's just that they're installing their default stuff. So
I will say, though, I appreciate Europe and the UK's efforts to try to stay on top of this type of shit, because America don't give a about what these tech companies do, how they do it, what they collected. Like, we are so far behind in that regard. So, you know, at a minimum, you know, I don't think this particular initiative is feasible, but at a minimum, I appreciate the effort.
I actually had somebody asking, it wasn't about the tech job, but it was about another tech show. And they said, why do you talk about what the EU does so often? And it's like, because it's a window into, if the EU does it and passes it, a year and a half later, the United States is going to follow along. Not because it was the right thing to do, but because the manufacturers of the devices decided it was easier to have a world default than it was to have one phone for the EU and one phone for everywhere else. So that's literally one of the reasons why we follow. It's like, if they do this there, it's going to happen here, just because it's easier. It's easier for them to, you know, to make as much money as they can by just making one default for everybody. So, yeah, that's why we talk about it. But y'all, we have a spotlight this week, and I'm looking through. This might be the first spotlight who was actually a millennial. The person we're going to talk about today, let me go ahead and bring it up here. She is, I want to say, in her early 30s. So today we're going to be talking about Annie Jean-Baptiste. So this week's spotlight shines on Annie Jean-Baptiste, head of product of inclusion and equity at Google and author of Building for Everyone, the first book about building inclusive products across intersections of 12 dimensions of diversity. Annie's list of accomplishments and accolades are long. Graduating from the University of Pennsylvania with degrees in international relations and political science, she currently serves as an entrepreneur in residence at the University of Pennsylvania's Graduate School of Education, a facilitator for Penn's Chief Learning Officer Business Acumen Program, and a member of both the CTA Health Equity and Access Leadership Coalition, and sits at the IEE's Executive Committee, Ethically Aligned Design Committee, and co-chairs the DEI Committee. Annie was inducted into the Haitian Roundtable's 1804 Society as one to watch and inducted as one of the 30 Black Stars for Face-to-Face Africa in 2019. She's a former American Heart Association spokesperson and a One Young World Ambassador focused on healthy lifestyles and underserved communities. She's also a former Hack the Hood mentor. At Google, Annie built the practice of product and inclusion and equity in order to expand how product teams thought about inclusion as it relates to the development and design. Since the launch of the product inclusion team in 2014, many companies across industries have followed suit and have created their own product inclusion teams and strategies. Annie has also been covered in Vogue, Essence Magazine, Business Insider, Teen Vogue, MSNBC, CNBC, ABC, Cheddar, Business Insider, The Huffington Post, The Root, The Council of Fashion Designers of America Annual Report, The Miami Times, Bustle, Boston Globe, and Fortune Magazine. Quite literally, like many other Black women, Annie Jean-Baptiste does everything. And I just wanted to put this one in here because actually somebody on Twitter said, hey, this might be a good person for, you know, for your spotlight. You're always picking folks who are older, who are of past. And I'm like, okay, yeah, let me go with some, you know, the young. Like I said, she is in her early 30s. She has got a lot of accolades for somebody that is that young. And as I said, you know, as many Black women do, she does kind of a little bit of everything. So want to give our shout out and our flowers to Annie Jean-Baptiste. Over
hashtag
at Google.
Black Girl Magic.
You ain't lying. It's like I purposely read everything because she does a little bit of everything.
Love to see it.
So, y'all, we did not have a new patron this week. So I think that broke actually probably 4 or 5 weeks straight that we've had one. We either had a patron or we've had somebody give us a raise. So we didn't have one, but I will once again tell folks how you can become a patron of The Tech John. Just head over to patreon.com / The Tech John. That's The Tech J-A-W-N. And over there, we have three tiers. Any one of those tiers, as we said earlier, gives you access to our live stream and our after party. And I believe we have a couple tiers over there that even get you an ad-free RSS stream directly on Patreon. So you don't have to hear our ads if you're listening to the actual podcast episode version of the show. So once again, that is patreon.com/thetechjohn. So with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap our show up. Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and tell folks how they can get at you?
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph. And I mean, if you're feeling like you need to see a little bit more Tech Life Steph, check out QVCplus.com and search for the 10-Minute Tech Break. I do some content now for QVC's streaming channel. And today in particular, there are a bunch of Cyber Monday tech gift recommendations that are on the homepage. So check out QVCplus.com as well.
All right. You can find me everywhere on the interwebs at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And you can find me everywhere at Rob Dunwood. And you know what? I'm actually on Mastodon, but I'd be lying if I could tell you how to find me over there. So I have to actually write something up. That's kind of one of the issues with Mastodon. We'll probably talk about that in a future episode of the show. But we are also everywhere online at The Tech John as well. So come and holler at us there. And y'all, until we meet again in a week's time. Peace.
Hey.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.